Hello, it's the year 2024. It's me, Matt Stewart, and we've sold out all four of our Do Go Ons live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But if you want to see me, you can do that. The show's called Dry Dryer, and we're at a new venue now. It's called The Grace Darling. Me and Sarenjaya Marnett, it's so much fun. The show's getting real good, I reckon. It's been heaps of fun, so we'd love to see you there. Use the discount code Do Go On for cheaper tickets. Also, we've now got the Do Go On quiz show. It's up online on the Stupid Old channel, so please check it out. Getting some lovely feedback so far. Please give it a watch, subscribe to the channel, maybe even comment on it, and, you know, feed those algorithm gods if you can. But love to see a Dry Dryer in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Check out the quiz show. Anyway, let's get on with this show.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On, a podcast with me, Dave Warnocky, and I am here with someone who's not me, but they are also on the show. It is Jess Perkins. Hello, Jess.
I am not you. Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am good, thank you, Jess. And we've got a third person to introduce. I'll throw that little hosting duty over to you today.
I get to do it too.
Well, who's it going to be?
He's not me, and he's not you.
Ooh.
He's Matt Stewart.
Yes. Hello, Matt Stewart.
Hey, guys.
That was exciting, hey?
Yeah, because I thought there was part of me that thought that was going to be Dave.
Sure.
But then you said that you've already introduced...
it's not Dave.
Yeah, both of you. And then I'm like, that's really narrows it down to probably me. But I'm always ready for something from left field with you, Jess, because you just throw things in and I never know.
I'm a wild card.
You're a wild card.
Yeah.
You're a wild card. You got a wild card into the Raw Comedy Final?
I did. And I've been wild carding it ever since.
There are some people who probably may have, this is the first time they've ever heard the show, and they genuinely are surprised to hear your voice, Matt. Do you want to say hi to them?
Oh, hi. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
It's really good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
20-odd episodes in, we're starting to get good at this. Can you tell?
Yeah, you're from that great intro, that great wild card of an intro. This is a show where we take it in turns to research a topic and then report back to the other guys on the topic. Matt, your turn. I was going to say on the podium.
Yeah.
Podium finish.
On the podium.
Yep. Oh, that's scraped good. In a third place. The podium, that's not bad.
Third place out of the three of us.
Yeah. Still on the podium.
Nah, but if you think about it, that's probably right though, isn't it?
The bronze medalist.
Yeah, he'd be the bronze. He's the Michelle.
Almost definitely, yes. I think that's fair.
The Michelle Williams. Child.
He's the Michelle Williams.
Yeah.
But to our Kelly Rowland and Beyonce Knowles, we'll say. He's the Michelle Obama to us, our Barack Obama, which we are both.
We're both Barack Obama.
I'm the Les Miserables to your Ron Hitler Barassi and Humphrey B. Flaubert from TISM.
Wow.
Sorry about that, Les. That was a bit rough.
It was also all too key members. Specific.
Wow, that was, and that's why you will never leave that third podium. No, that's not true.
I'm not even on the third place on the podium. I'm on the third podium.
Yeah, ninth.
So that's, what is that, ninth?
Ninth. Third on the third.
Have you guys
still happy to be involved.
Did you ever play sport or win any medals or certificates growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have mentioned this before because I do all the time. I was St. Paul's Junior Tennis Club's most promising junior.
Hello. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What, Great. And what happened to your tennis career?
Well, when it went from juniors to like open age, like adults or whatever, I quit. Because I would have had to find another competition, and it just never happened.
Most promising, and then you gave away that talent.
What could have been?
Well, I mean, most promising at St. Paul's Junior Tennis Club.
Still something, isn't it?
That's right.
I wasn't even the best player on my team. It was a weird result.
Shut up. Take it.
No, I do take it.
Yeah, own it with pride. I was U7 high jump champion. So.
High jump? That's really hard.
I beat all the tall girls too.
What was your technique? Were you scissor kicking over or doing the Fosby flop?
You were
in a flopper. I can tell you're a flopper from way back in the day.
Yeah, no.
And how
good
high,
arch.
How high do you reckon you could have back then? You peaked.
I don't remember. I don't remember how high it was.
Dave, could you just stand up for a second? I want to see if Jess still has it.
Yeah.
Ready?
I needed more of a run up.
On your marks.
Here we go.
And here she comes. Well, that's great technique. And she's cleared me by a country mile. Well done.
Yeah, I'm good.
Jess, that was really good.
Thank you.
The way you landed back in your seat.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I'm not even cherry puffed. On the top. Not even puffed.
Do you get puffed from a little jump? Like, as far as sports go.
Well, you've never been U7 high jump champion, have you?
Well, quick, ask me how many things I won.
How many things did you win?
Absolutely zero. Let's move on. Okay.
Oh, great.
Old Tiny Hands Warnocky. Couldn't hold a pencil, but could hold a javelin, apparently.
No, you say, you laugh about my tiny hands. I could never do discus in primary school because I couldn't get my hands around it.
What the fuck?
I had really small hands, okay?
How are you an adult now? How did you make it?
It's luck.
I think it was like nature trying to just weed out the weak, yet somehow you just clawed your way back in.
That's the problem with the internet age, is people like Dave survive now.
When they shouldn't have.
If this was, you know...
If we were hunting and gathering.
You'd be gone.
And instead of gone, I'm just gaunt anyway.
You know when you see someone who's enjoyed something even before they've said it?
Yeah, he did that.
That was a great moment.
Thank you.
And I would have been too. You know?
Is this week's topic sport related at all?
No, it isn't, but it's...
sorry about that, everyone.
Have you explained the hat recently? We talk about the hat a bit.
Yeah.
So the way we pick our topics is we either think of something we find interesting ourselves, or we get people to tweet or email in, which you can do at any time, at DoGoOnPod on Twitter and DoGoOnPod@gmail.com. And then... Matt has been putting all these suggestions into a hat, and lately we've actually just been pulling them out and researching what you guys want us to talk about.
Mm.
Yeah. So on this week's episode, I've actually got two suggestions, because the one I pulled out just tied in nicely to another one that we got a few weeks ago. So I've kind of combined them both. The first one is just like a little bit of a preamble at the start, I guess. So
this is a... Double. So there's
it's like a double header.
A mini and then a main.
There's a mini and a main.
So an entree.
Ooh.
The main one is involved in the mini one.
I like this. This is... What is this? The first time we've had this?
Yeah, it is. Look, I'm changing the face of Do Go On Podcast.
They said it couldn't be done.
Yeah. I guess they probably would have if someone had asked them.
So we usually start with a question to get into the topic. Are you going to have two questions or just go to the one and then...
I'll do the first. I'll ask a question for the first one, and then we'll figure out for the second one. Of course, as we usually say, this is super tedious for the people listening at home because they've read the topic as they pushed the download button. But anyway,
might have even been the reason they downloaded it.
Yeah, could be.
So they're like, just hurry up and talk about it.
We don't give a shit about your sporting shitness.
They do though.
They love that
deep down. I think they just got to know us a little better. Small hands, Warnocky.
That's right.
High jumping, Jess. Perkins.
And most promising talent, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On the podium. So.
Third. Yes.
This year that we're in right now, you might not be listening to it when we're recording, but this year is 2016. My question is, what bit of bad luck has been happening to a lot of celebrities this year?
Oh, had a lot of deaths.
Yeah, that's it. All right, let's deaths. Celebrity deaths.
Oh, so you... that was the question. What bad luck has been happening? So this year alone, A lot of people have died, but in previous years, obviously, celebrities have never died.
No, but they have. But last year, for example, I think we all remember 2015 was a big year for tax fraud for celebrities. So that was the bad luck they're having last year. This year, it's all about death day. Like Rolling, do read a magazine every now and then, would you?
Rolling Stone's top 10 bad luck moments of this year. Number one will be celebrity deaths.
Yeah. I mean, you're being a smartass, but it's a serious thing.
I know. No, we are joking about death.
None of the Rolling Stones have died this year as well, which is weird.
Yet.
Good point. So this came in from on our Facebook page from a listener named Jo. She asked if we had noticed that so many celebrities are dying this year, and she wanted to know if we sort of had a theory about it, whether it's coincidence. But she said she was blown away about it, and she's taking predictions around the office as to who's going to be next.
Which is creepy, but good call. It's a good fun game. Who do you reckon's going to
die? But
then,
like, if you're right, you're like, yes, whoops.
See, this is the second time it's happened. Remember when you did the Queen Elizabeth episode, and I was like, I was going to do that. Like 2 weeks ago, I googled the 27 Club.
Right.
To like look into it, and maybe it was because maybe I'd read Joe's message, or maybe. It was before that, but I was sort of like, oh, I wonder if there's something there, and then I forgot all about it.
The 27 Club's a good one, but I think what I've noticed, I've got a bit of a list.
Yeah, hit us with the list to remind people of who has died. Is it just this year you're focusing on?
Yeah, well, it actually, to me, it started late last year, after Christmas last year.
Okay.
Stevie Wright, the Easy Beat singer, died. Then Lemmy, the frontman.
From Motorhead,
bass player and singer. Died a day later. Then into January, David Bowie passed away. Then Glenn Frey from the Eagles, co-founder of the Eagles, died. Harper Lee died, To Kill a Mockingbird. And then into March, George Martin, the fifth Beatle, one of the many fifth Beatles, passed away. So there definitely have been a lot. That were the big ones. There's heaps. Like, I went through long lists, but I would say, in my mind there, that's sort of probably towards the bigger names. John English passed away recently, Australian TV star and singer from All Together Now. That's what I remember him from as a child, but he was also, like, in Pirates of Penzance and stuff. But those guys, I think the one thing I'd say that links all those people are that they were at least a little bit old. Like, the youngest person on that list was 69, so I don't know if it's... Well, 67, actually, Glenn Frey, but...
At least a little bit old.
Yeah, not to be too...
And they're all musical people, the ones you...
They're all musical, apart from Harper Lee, who was an author.
But she has the word harp in her first name.
That's right. No, yeah, good point. She was. Mockingbirds have a beautiful singing voice.
That's right. So it's all coming back to music.
Yes. All right, you want someone who wasn't...
No, I'm just thinking that maybe that's part of the theory.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Is there anyone who's not musical?
Yeah, for instance, Joe Alasky, who was a voice actor who took over the voice roles for Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Sylvester the Cat and Tweety Bird after Mel Blanc died in 1989. So probably the versions that we were familiar with growing up.
And I'll just bring it back to music again. He was the voice of the bunny, but there was quite a popular music competition called The Voice.
Was there? That feels like
high-fived Dave because I saw where he was going and I fucking loved it.
Because I'm going through them and they're all musical. A lot of them are musical.
What about
Dan Haggerty, who was Grizzly Adams, an actor, best known for his beard and rugged looks. He was 74. Is that funny to you, Dave?
What a mystery. Taken too soon. It's like you're treating this like some sort of conspiracy. 74-year-old man has died.
No, I mean, I think I said early on that it does seem weird that they're all happening at the moment, but it does seem like there are not many that are sort of well before their time. I think like Bowie...
Yeah, David Bowie, was he 69 years old?
He was 69, that's right.
So that is quite young. So having said that, I just laughed at the 74-year-old. There's not that much difference.
No,
69
not.
sounds on paper a lot younger than 74 to me.
And
I was very sad about David Bowie, I will admit that. And shocked, I was surprised, I didn't realise he was ill.
Yeah, me either.
I think there are different theories about. I was sort of reading why people think that maybe it seems like so many celebrities are dying, when maybe it's no more than normal, but they are some big ones, right? So there was a theory that I don't think quite checks out, that because of the internet age, a lot more celebrities are
well known
and being produced, and sort of their fandom has become bigger because of the online world.
And is it also easier to find a community and then, like, because you know when you go on Facebook when David Bowie died, or Lemmy, to a lesser extent, people are like, rest in peace, David Bowie, or here's my favourite David Bowie track, or to a lesser extent, Motorhead song, or something like that. And then all these rock legends came out, like people from the Foo Fighters, like Lemmy was like a big idol of mine. Totally. But like in older times, maybe only really famous people would be on the national news. Mm. And apart from that, it'd just be a small newspaper article. And
that might make sense. Like, only the metal community would have really been aware of Lemmy's passing, when now that's just, like, everyone's got metalhead friends and they see him on their posting about on their Facebook. What do you guys think about people posting about the grief of celebrities on Facebook? Do you have an issue with it?
I don't have an issue with it. I don't particularly like it.
I don't think I've ever posted about a celebrity's death.
Gough Whitlam, I did.
Yeah?
I tweeted about Gough Whitlam. What did you
tweet about Gough Whitlam?
Don't even remember.
Should we give context to overseas listeners?
He's a prime minister.
Of this country. And a famous one at that.
Yeah, he made a lot of change in a short amount of time. Yeah, and he's seen by some people as being a political hero in Australia, and some people probably seem the opposite of that, pretty divisive. But
most people, most politicians in hindsight, and at the time, are like that as well. But so what was your post about Gough Whitlam?
I don't even remember. It was just a little tweet. It was just something like, I honestly don't remember. But that's the only time I can think that I've said anything about a celebrity, because I kind of feel like, firstly, mourning is generally something quite personal and private. It doesn't have to be. Like, if it makes you feel better to share something, then by all means, go for it. But at the same, like, you didn't know David Bowie. Oh, but that's so unfair, because then sometimes certain musicians can really have a big impact on your life. I don't know. Everybody do whatever you want to do.
Have you ever posted one, Matt?
Yeah, I posted a video of Motorhead when he passed, and a live video when I found footage of the time I saw them. So I posted that, and I did that directly after reading Motorhead, on the Motorhead account, them asking people to celebrate his life and talk about it. And so I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, maybe that's different. That's better.
Because they want, like, I mean, I don't see what the downside is. It's kind of like a nice thing. It's a celebration, you know, of the life. I don't really have an issue with it. I know it pisses some people off. Like, they feel like it's turning something into a selfish moment. Like, how can I make this about me? But, I mean, it's a fine line, I guess. I didn't think I was doing that, but I guess it's exactly what I was doing. This was the time I saw Motorhead, and the first time, and it was amazing. No, I did.
I think that's different. I think, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think some people make it a lot about themselves, and it's an attention-seeking thing.
But I imagine my post would have read exactly like that.
Just because I know you and like you, that I don't mind it. If it's somebody that I don't like, I'm like, fuck off, dickhead.
Yeah.
But what part of social media is not about me?
Yeah, that's totally. I have an opinion on something.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, everything you write is, I mean, some is worse than others, but it is funny when people get a bit uptight about it. Like, come on, mate. We get it. You're having a good day. But it's like, well, what else do you use it for?
I just don't like when it's really flashy and like, oh my God, can't stop crying, because, you know, a musician who you know one song of theirs, and you're just doing it, jumping on a bandwagon. That I don't appreciate.
It is funny. Well, because it's like, you can stop crying to type this message, I reckon.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be doing it through the tears.
But that's the thing. Like, if it was,
I'm so sad. I got to let people know.
But if it was a family member, would you do it? You know, like, would you?
I wouldn't. Some people do. I always feel it at, like, when you get messages directed at someone, it's like, I guess when someone's passed away and you want to somehow put a message out to them, like knowing that it, Facebook probably isn't the medium, but what is?
Yeah.
Like you say a prayer or something, but if you don't really believe in that, I guess what Facebook makes it feel like you're getting it out there to them.
Facebook is our religion.
Super ridiculous.
In a way, isn't
but it's
it?
Whatever helps the grieving process for you, I guess.
Mm.
I always find it funny when people go like, I've got the best girlfriend in the world. Happy anniversary.
Oh my God, imagine
baby.
That. Yeah.
And it's like, well, I imagine you're going to see them today. Probably just let them know, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. No,
or is that a sweet thing where you've gone, look, I want everyone to know that I love this person. Is that a nice thing?
No, but the chances are they're sitting on the couch next to each other and they're not actually talking to each other.
I got one word for that, and that is gross. Ugh, I hate when I see that. Nah, next.
Icky.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
I especially hate it because nobody loves me.
We love you, Jess.
I love you, Jess. Hey, what were we talking about again?
Death.
Death.
Yeah.
And I'll probably die
anyway,
alone.
We said Bowie passed away when he was 69. Another,
which is a pretty great age to pass away at, am I
David,
right?
David, come on.
There was another great guy, a great celebrity, was in the 69 Club, which I think...
Is there such a thing?
There is now.
Yeah.
Should we aim for that?
I mean,
69.
I mean, there's a 69
Let's all
club.
Aim
the 27 club's
yeah.
pretty famous, I think, because it's quite a young age. But I think the studies have shown, that's what a wanker says when they don't have an actual study. I think studies have shown.
I think you'll find.
The 27 is nowhere near the most common age that big celebrities die. They're normally a bit older. But
no, but it is quite a young and tragic
age. It's a young
age
and a lot of...
They keep dying from like drug overdoses and stuff. They die in dramatic ways, not just old age.
Yeah, totally. But some other people who passed away at 69 years of age, which is still youngish.
There is a 69 club. I'm a big fan of this.
Stop saying 69 club.
I've got a couple of names. They include Louis Armstrong.
Oh.
Saddam Hussein, which is probably not.
Well.
And Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he lived life to the full.
Yeah. I mean, I think 69 is still too young.
Yeah.
Maybe not for Saddam. I didn't really think about that. You know, I don't have an opinion on that. What? Oh, boy.
He was executed.
He was hung.
Too soon. Gone too soon.
Really?
Oh, that is awful. No, definitely not. And edit point.
So 69 for Louis.
But also one other man... who I see as a great man, and this was the other suggestion of topic. It came from a guy who got on board this podcast early days named Cecil. You guys familiar with his work?
Yes, we know Cecil's work.
We enjoy his tweets.
So he suggested that... Do you know who I'm talking about?
I might.
Who do you want to...
Let me just tell you this. Ho, ho, ho. Now I have a machine gun. Great impression of...
Sounded like Sean Connery, to be honest.
I thought
it wasn't Sean Connery.
But that's what it sounded like.
Well, Sean Connery is still alive and definitely in his 80s.
That we know of. We're talking... Are we talking Alan Rickman?
That was Rickman. The impression. Come on, everyone. Die Hard.
No, that was very Sean Connery.
I mean, I know the line. I just wasn't sure.
Oh, I
thought
I
it might
line.
Have been Sean Connery doing Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Try again. Say Harry Potter in the Alan Rickman voice.
I don't really watch Harry Potter. I watch Die Hard. God.
Just say the words Harry Potter in their Alan Rickman voice.
Oh, God.
Your face is fucked right now.
Look at these, like a cockney voice.
All right. Maybe we'll come back to you.
I think my favorite Rickman line, which is probably one of his more famous ones, was from Prince of Thieves, where he was playing Sheriff of Nottingham. I think it was his cousin. He told him to cut his... cut Robin Hood's heart out with a spoon, and the cousin said, couldn't we just use a knife? And Rickman goes, no, I'm going to use a spoon. He's like, why a spoon? He says, it's duller. Oh, I can't do the voice. He says something like, it's duller. It'll hurt more, you idiot. That's really good.
That's a great line. That's a great line. Still better than your Sean Connery.
He probably did a little bit better. I didn't disrespect him by trying to do a voice. To be honest,
I will impersonate whichever dead celebrity I like. And I will do it in the style of Sean Connery every single time.
Do Sean Connery.
I will only do him once he dies.
Dude.
That's the rule.
I will only do him once he dies.
Sean Connery.
Dave
I mean.
Warnocky.
Sexiest man alive.
You're going to do him? 20th century. You're going to do him?
Did not know that. Sean Connery. I believe it.
Moneypenny.
Well, that's not bad.
It's James. Lost it. Sending you a fax.
Still fine. Sending you a fax.
From his car. He's got a fax in the car. What a cool guy.
So
Alan Rickman, yes.
Do you guys know much of him? As a suggestion, I was like, all right. So things I wanted to find, I'm like, Alan Rickman controversy.
Did you see what you're typing in?
Yeah, I came up with nothing.
Scandal.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to see if there... It sounds like he just... Everything that came up was just great actor, great guy.
Great guy.
But so I thought maybe we could just go through his early years, talk about his career a little bit, and that could sort of be the episode. What do you think about that?
Nah.
No, I want the controversy.
Yeah, I want
to... I'm afraid I can't deliver you any.
Well... thank you so much for listening, everybody. It's been another episode. Do go on.
What about the people who... I mean, I already feel horrible for the Rickman fans who might have searched this out in particular. Just like, it'd be really nice to just talk about... Hear people talking about Alan for a bit longer.
All right.
And we've started off with all this bullshit.
Yeah, we have done a lot of bullshit. Sorry.
So insensitive.
Sorry, everybody.
So... Alan Rickman was born in Acton, London in 1946. He was the son of Margaret. She was a housewife, and his father's name was Bernard, and he worked in a factory.
What kind of factory?
Oh my God, that was my question! Nah!
If you reckon I had that answer, do you think I would have said a whatever factory?
Just say a machine gun factory.
Let's guess. Machine gun? I reckon biscuit.
Let's go with biscuit.
Matt, that's what do you reckon?
That's much more likely.
I reckon he worked in a dream factory.
Fuck off, Matt. Pick something that actually happens in factories or you don't get to play our game anymore.
Maybe I don't want to play your game anymore, Jess.
Biscuit
Maybe I'm factories. Sick of playing your little games.
I reckon biscuit factory is pretty high up there. Possibility.
Imagine. Wouldn't that be a great job? Of all factory jobs. Bloody bickies. All right.
But we're all and we're also
sorry,
talking
boss,
about
just
1940s.
Got to test this one. Yeah, they
so
had bickies
I can't
back
imagine
then.
The factories would have been great.
They're only making like boring biscuits like Scotch Fingers.
Ugh.
I've just
no ice
Googling
bobos.
It's just
46.
Saying,
there's no creams.
Factory worker.
I like shortbread creams personally.
Oh. I didn't know that existed. Yeah, shortbread and
good.
Cream together.
No, they're like the, they're
yeah,
like
yeah.
an Arnott's shortbread cream.
Yeah, they got the three speed lines down the middle.
They do.
I'm a Monte Carlo guy.
Oh, man. The king of biscuits.
Like
aren't
every in. Everyone probably is, pretty much, apart from...
I'm a teddy bear or a shortbread cream. Ugh. I like teddy bears.
I'm bored just listening to you talk.
I'll take a Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kingston, yeah, I
those, but
could take
it
at a
second,
pinch.
Second to a Monte Carlo. All right, so Bernard was working in a Monte Carlo factory. That's when his wife Margaret gave birth to one Alan Rickman, 1946. What else we got?
Rickman's dad, the factory worker, Monte Carlo, died when he was only 8 years old.
Oh. No.
When Alan was only 8 years old.
So,
not his dad.
Wow, young dad, wow.
It's happened.
He was potent.
So he...
He had a son that's, what, maybe seven.
Potent is just a disgusting word.
Was it
when
some
talking
sort of...
about an...
Oh,
a
child.
And was Bernard killed in some sort of factory, like biscuit-related mishap?
Well, no, because biscuits would never hurt you. It has to have been something different.
No, he
the
died
The war?
Of... Yeah, he died of the law.
Is it the war?
The war. He died of
Which
the war.
Which finished... A while before.
Before the Alan was born.
Yeah.
So he died when Alan was eight.
There's been an accident at the biscuit factory, Gov. Is Mr. Rickman all right? No.
Yeah. And then Alan comes in, he's like, Dad. Yes. I'm Sean Connery. No one knows who that is yet.
This is 1954.
I'll make you pay for this, Blofeld.
Oh, when you stop laughing, I would let you know that this left Alan's mother to raise Rickman and his three siblings all by herself. Still having a chuckle over there, Jess?
Do you reckon they got given a lifetime supply of Monte Carlos to ease the pain?
I didn't find that written down specifically, but I also didn't find it not written down specifically, which was interesting. Rickman attended Derwent Water Primary School in Acton.
Is that where Derwent pencils come from?
Oh, bloody hell. I want to think that it is.
Again, we haven't seen it not written down.
I can't definitively rule it out.
Derwent is a river.
Yeah, Derwent Water Primary School.
Yeah, so that's where those pencils come from, Derwent River.
Nailed it.
It comes from the river. Yeah, they occur there naturally.
Of course. They're just dredged from the bottom.
Yeah.
They come in 112 different colours.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in order, though. That's someone's job. Could have been Alan Rickman's dad's job. Pencil-related mishap.
What, after?
No, before.
Working two jobs.
Yeah, it was hard work.
The Derwent Water Primary School followed the Montessori method of education. Heard of that?
Yes.
I hadn't heard of it before. I've got a few notes about it.
Is Montessori the one where there's no sort of grades? In terms of like the structures of grade 1, grade 2, grade 3,
yeah, exactly. So it's like the classes were mixed age.
Yeah.
So you might be in a class with someone who's
32. Alan, pair up with Joseph. He's a 32-year-old bricklayer.
Yeah.
But he's learning algebra this week.
Yeah. So that sort of thing. But it's
cheese chips at play lunch.
It was invented by a lady named Maria Montessori.
Oh, well.
No coincidence. That was why.
Huh.
Because her name was also the.
Do you know anything about Maria?
She was an Italian physician.
Maria Montessori, Italian, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And she studied extensively education with young special needs kids. And that's how she came to create the Montessori method. Other things that you'd find in a Montessori class, the students were able to choose their own activities within a prescribed range of options. Right. Yeah, not just...
It's not just like Play-Doh. All right, Alan, you're nine.
Murder. Chris, not again.
Chris, you've tried that three times this week.
Of the two, like, Play-Doh probably was an option, right? At a certain stage. Murder...
Seriously?
Well, like, I mean, of those two suggestions...
But you're going to limit the children's opportunity to murder if that's what they want to do? If that's how they want to learn?
Yeah, Maria Montessori is...
No, personally, I mean, everybody really learns differently. Personally, I learn by doing.
I learn by killing. That's how I learn.
Yeah.
I that's how I learn that's a bad thing to do.
Yeah. Right. Else would you have known that?
I know. Then I move on to Play-Doh.
Right, okay. Well, that is true. It is learning by doing. That is what the Montessori... method is all about. If I pronounce that differently each time?
No.
So the discovery model meant that the students would learn the concepts from working with materials rather than by being instructed directly by the teacher. They kind of just figure it out for yourself. So it's pretty much the Montessori method.
See, I would have really struggled with my small hands if someone had just given me something.
I'm going to stop you there, young Dave.
Was there a program for small-handed
figure
boys?
It out yourself. No, I was not going to take any of that.
Sorry.
You'd be a great teacher in a Montessori school.
It'd be a pretty great job for a teacher, wouldn't it? Sit down and figure it out yourself.
Yeah, really
I can't
good.
Help.
Okay, do whatever you want. See ya. And then you just go outside and have a smoke.
Just through the window, putting your thumbs up.
Yeah. Looking good, kids. Like the room's on fire.
All right.
Yep.
Learn how to put that out.
Yeah, Jess, your arson program's really coming along.
Thank you, miss.
He became involved in drama in high school, but excelled at painting and ended up studying at the Royal College of Art, which led to him becoming a graphic designer at the Notting Hill Herald.
Oh, God.
So he was doing that while he was still studying. He was already working a job as a graphic designer.
What a dreamboat.
Yes.
He became a
graphic designer. So that was his. He actually had a career before acting, which isn't super common for the superstars, I don't think. And then after graduating, he started his own graphic design studio with some friends.
Oh, do you know the name of it?
Can we
guess it?
Yes.
All right, you're Alan Rickman. Okay, Dave, you studied a lot of drama through university. I need you to get into character, okay? You are Alan Rickman, okay? B, Alan Rickman, I'm your friend.
Okay.
We're having coffee.
I got this.
We're naming our graphic design company.
Welcome to Shakespeare's Dog. Was it called Shakespeare's Dog? The graphic design studio? I studied drama, of course.
I think, okay, Matt, even if that isn't the correct answer, that is a ways off. Okay, well, even if that isn't the correct answer, I think we can at least acknowledge that for a moment, Dave left us.
He did.
And Alan Rickman was with us.
And I would like to say that DOG is an acronym for Shakespeare's Design or Graphics.
Fuck.
DOG.
Just off the cuff, he came up with that.
That was off the cuff.
Yeah, I think you'll find on that laptop that you've got written down that that's actually the correct answer of Alan Rickman's design studio. Design or graphic, Shakespeare's Dog.
Yeah, I think it was AKA, which is an acronym for...
That's an initialism for, also known as...
Damn it.
That's a callback to an early episode.
Yeah. A very early episode.
I think the first one ever.
Yeah.
AKA, also known as...
Graffiti. G-R-A-P-H-I-T-I.
Graph. E-T.
You
like
think
graphic.
That that's better than Shakespeare's
graph
dog?
It. I.
Uh huh.
You think that's better than Shakespeare's dog design or graphics?
Look, honestly, yes.
Really?
Yes. I want to move on if I can, because that is rubbish.
Tweet
everything
in.
About what you just did.
Hashtag Shakespeare's dog, because I think that is
only
incredible.
Because I'm lazy. That is the only reason why anyone is hearing what you just said.
Your performance was moving, though.
Thank you.
That was really impressive.
Yeah, moving me to vomit.
Oh, okay. But that SmackDown was also quite impressive. I feel very trapped between... I love both of you so, so much. So I'm having a great time.
You have to choose.
Well, I'm going to tell Matt to fuck off.
That was his impression of me.
That's not bad.
Thank you. I'm the master of impressions today.
he left his own little company. They were successful, but he left it after 3 years. And... he did that because he decided that he wanted to have a bloody crack at acting. An acting crack. He wanted to have an acting...
Cracked.
Yeah, good luck, mate. Good luck.
He went for a cracking.
Do you reckon his mates were like, you'll be back. You'll be back at graffiti.
Oh, big time.
Almost definitely, because that's just how people think.
Won't even clean up your desk, mate. You'll be back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave that for you.
Yeah.
I won't even get rid of your leftover spaghetti bolognese right. out of the fridge, because it'll keep... 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and you'll be back.
You'll be back.
I'll keep your world's best boss mug on your desk there. Still got tea in it. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Tea keeps. Tea keeps for... I reckon you'll be back in 15 minutes. It'll be a little bit cooler.
This is piping hot. It'll probably be at appropriate temperature by the time you get back from your acting failure.
If anything, you really need a break.
Yeah.
You've been working too hard.
You'll need an acting break, but you won't get one, and that's why you'll be back here.
Yeah. Within 15 minutes.
Within 15 minutes. Bloody hell, you need a bit of patience in the acting game, Alan. You'll never...
Yeah.
Anyway, so he enrolled at RADA. Do you know what RADA stands for?
Royal Academy Dramatic Arts.
Yes.
Yes!
Only it was just art, not plural arts. So.
Well, I don't want to be pedantic here, but I actually think that it's known colloquially as Shakespeare's Dog. So bringing it back.
If Shakespeare had a dog, what kind of dog would it be? And, second follow-up question, what would he name his dog?
Some sort of water hound.
And he would name it Graffiti. And he did.
That's right. It's all coming together. It's all coming together.
Very good.
During his studies, Shakespeare was a big focus. He attended RADA when he was around 26 or 27 years
old.
See,
that's quite old to start studying acting full-time, which is great.
So there's still hope for us.
I could be.
We're 26 this year.
I could be a professional actor, a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jess is already making strides towards that now.
Doth. That's about all I got, but it's strides. But
that it was a stride. More of that was probably more of a, like a little step, but.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before jumping, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It would be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh, my God.
So from there, So after graduating RADA, would you say RADA or RADA?
RADA.
RADA.
That's because I'm thinking like WADA, right? RADA is better, but I imagine it's
because it's rad.
Yeah.
But RADA.
It's
rad,
eh?
RADA.
Oh, that's rad, eh? Yeah, you're going to study. Yeah, where are you studying? I'm going to start at rad, eh? Oh, that's rad, eh? Yeah, it's rad, eh? Yeah, it's rad, eh?
And then that same person goes and performs Shakespeare. That makes sense. It is the East, and Juliet is the Sun.
I think that says a bit about someone when their go-to Shakespeare references.
Is Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah, very mainstream. I would have gone with...
Out damn spot.
Probably one of the ones you wouldn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
What's that, Macbeth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know a thing or two.
Never heard of it.
Ugh, I hate myself.
Now we hate you too, though.
Oh, that's right. Team, after graduating RADA.
So was it a three-year course or just a one-year?
Three-year course.
Wow, so he's, what, 29 or something by the time he's finished?
Yeah, I think.
Late 20s. Matt's not sure. Late 20s.
Yeah, it was late 20s.
It's impressive that he had one job in the arts that's hard to crack and he was doing it well. And then he was like, you know what? I'm going to be an actor now.
Well, I think he said that it just was kind of not done. You just couldn't just go and be an actor. He saw that as being like too, like it was seen as being a bit too self-indulgent and where's this guy going to be an actor? Get a real job, mate, sort of thing.
It would be like that.
Yeah, it's weird because of that attitude. That's why it's slightly easier for the people who do make it, even though it's still brutally hard.
Mm.
Imagine how hard it would be if everyone followed their dreams.
Ugh. Ugh.
Or maybe it's only the people that follow their dreams that are any good. I don't know. I don't think that's true. I reckon there'd be people out there, graphic designers, who would be mad actors who just never quite had the courage or they weren't in the right circumstance to give it a crack. But I can't prove that. There's no way I can, so don't make me.
But also, it wasn't not written down.
No, that's true. It wasn't.
It's just in my head today.
Get out of me head, mate. Get out. You're clawing at me lobes, my temporal lobes.
Man, this is the third time I'm starting this sentence. After graduating RADA, Rickman acted in many stage productions through England and Scotland. And he also started getting involved with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Huh, haven't heard of him.
In 1985, he scored the lead role in the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of... You know when you can get pronunciations from a website? I looked this up, but I'm not going to get it right. Liaison d'Angers. That's not it. But it's spelled,
it's not even a Shakespeare.
No, it was like an adaptation of something else, but they did it. I'm going to call it if you said it in an Australian accent, it'd be Les Liaisons Dangerousies.
Oh, boy. Is it something to do with dangerous liaisons.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
So, did you say, what year was this? 1985.
1985.
So he's 39 and he's getting his big break. Is that right?
1985. His big... No, that's not right. He was born in 46. 46. Yes, is that right?
Never doubt Dave's maths.
Is that right?
So 39, and this is his big stage break.
So he, wow. Yeah, so wow. He was, well, I mean, yes, yes.
So he's been doing bit part, like, not so even he, bit parts, but doing, touring, but this is a big step up.
Yeah,
like
this is a bit of a break, but I mean, he's had breaks, and, you know, it's like a career is never one big break. It might be seen that way by the public. Like, sure. The public see his big break coming later. Like, if he didn't get that further big break, we wouldn't be talking about this big break sort of thing.
Sure, but something...
That's all a step.
The next milestone in his life is 39. So that's quite, you know...
Yeah, so through his 30s, he did a lot of acting, a lot of stage acting. And he also was... But he was on some BBC TV productions and stuff like that through that time as well. So, I mean, he had a bunch of different breaks of different sizes. But yeah, 1985, he scored the lead role in Les Liaisons Dangereuses. And that production went really well in England and was transferred to Broadway in 1987, which was Rickman's introduction to the American entertainment industry, I guess, and also vice versa.
Yeah, right.
A year later, in 1988, he scored his first role in a Hollywood blockbuster, playing German villain Hans Gruber in the first Die Hard movie.
Nice.
Which is just a great
one of the all-time great action movies.
Yes. I'll come back to that in a second, but first, just want to talk about some of the... He was nominated for a Tony Award for his role in the Broadway version of the Les Liaisons Dangereuses.
Let's just call it the French play.
The French play. So
nominated for a Tony.
So he's nominated for a Tony. One little bit of the EGOT, but he didn't win it, but...
That's nice, though.
Yeah, it's great. Like, Like, the man's got skills. Big skills. That was
and not just graphic design skills, mind you.
That's right. Or dog naming skills. That was his first major award nomination. From there, he also was nominated for two Primetime Emmy Awards.
Oh.
He won one. So that was the only little bit of the EGOT he got. He was nominated for one Golden Globe, which he won. He was nominated for four BAFTAs, again winning one. Three Screen Actors Guild Awards, winning one.
Wow.
And he was nominated for another Tony Award in 2002, which he didn't quite nab. Apart from that, so they're probably the major ones. These ones are a bit more fun. He was also nominated for two MTV Awards.
Now, that's the one you want. I think that it should be called a MeGot.
Yeah.
Because you want the MTV, then that's got to come first before the Emmy, the Grammy, Oscar, or Tony. The MeGot...
100% agree with you. I like MeGOT as well. It sounds
actually good. No, I disagree. Sorry, it's just above an MTV Kids Choice Award.
Kids Choice, yeah.
You want a Kids Choice Award? You might get slimed.
Oh man, you might get. I think the trophies are often like surfboards and stuff like
they
that.
Are.
Can you slot the KC surfboard into the MeGOT there?
KFC.
KFC Kids Choice.
Kids Choice.
Oh, Kids Choice. I thought you were going to say get some KFC in there. The Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Awards.
MTV.
Well, you were way off, Dave.
Emmy, like, Oscar.
Anyway, if you can't do it, that's fine, but don't bother stalling any longer. It's tricky because it should be CK, really.
No, hang on, look at him. His brain's ticking.
I'll come back to you. So he won one MTV award for his portrayal of Professor Snape in Harry Potter, which we haven't talked about yet, but he goes
spoiler
on.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. The final one, the one with the Deathly Hallows Part 2. The other one he lost... which was for best villain for his portrayal of the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which he played in the 90s. Isn't that sort of...
And what was the award for? Best?
Best villain.
Best villain.
And I see that as being one of the best villain performances ever, right?
I think he's a good villain.
He's often said to be one of the best, and he changed big screen villains forever with his portrayal of Hans Gruber. But I looked up... I was... Like, this is bullshit. How could he possibly have lost that in 1992, right? So I looked it up, and there was pretty strong villain competition that year.
All right, 1992. Let's think about this.
Dave, you were two.
But is that too early for Speed, which I think is the best villain ever, Dennis Hopper?
I think it was too early for that. I think he might have been nominated for that. But the other nominees were Rebecca De Mornay from The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Robert De Niro from Cape Fear.
Oh, see, that's a great villain. That's Robert terrifying.
Patrick from Terminator 2.
Oh, that's also a great villain.
And Wesley Snipes from New Jack City. I don't remember that movie, but the winner was Rebecca De Mornay for The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
I didn't even know that
because
film.
Women can be evil too, you guys.
Yes.
Equality.
Definitely can. But that's pretty sweet.
Equality-vil.
The Equality-vil Award goes to Rebecca De Mornay. I don't know that movie.
Though they're probably three of his biggest roles. Like, who do you think of when you think of his most famous roles? Which ones do you think of?
Back on Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Hans Gruber.
They're the
Snape.
Snape and Sheriff.
Love Actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah, which I get, he was in the Love Actually guy was a little bit. He wasn't a villain. He was kind of a nice guy, but he was kind of an asshole because he cheat or was going to?
Yeah, he didn't. I don't think he actually did, but he destroyed his marriage.
Right, because he bought a necklace or something.
Yeah,
man, people have turned on that movie. They loved it for quite a few years after it came out, and now every Christmas.
Who's turned on that movie? Give me names and numbers.
Public. Oh, yeah, you're still on board?
Yes.
Okay, good.
It's a great film.
It's just
it's a masterpiece.
Wow, okay.
Big call? Big call.
There's a fair bit of creepiness in there. Do you think it's... People write essays about it every year.
Creepiness?
Yeah, just some a bit gross stuff.
Would you give it the Jess Perkins Kids' Choice Award?
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's
I would.
Great.
The Jess Perkins Kids' Choice Award.
Chuck that in
Which
your
Which are the awards that my children give out.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go. Took you a sec.
Yeah, to imagine you with children. Yes, it did.
Yes, it did. Because I'm lonely.
Yeah. Fair enough too. I was back to Die Hard. He almost didn't accept the role of Hans Gruber.
What?
Yeah, which obviously was a big turning point in his career. Oh, I mean, it wasn't a turning point. It was just an elevation of his career.
Yeah, just a big step up.
Yeah. So, speaking in 2015, he recalled his initial dislike of the role. He was offered it only a couple of days after arriving in America in 1987.
What?
Just in the street. Man, you look evil. Whoa. Yeah. And then he starts speaking. They're like, "Wow, you sound evil."
Yeah. Can you do German? Oh my goodness.
So,
this is a direct quote. He said, "I didn't know anything about LA. I didn't know anything about the film business. I'd never made a film before. But I was extremely cheap." And apparently Bruce Willis was costing the movie about $7 million, which was crazy back then.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it almost sounds like that's not a real fact, but I read it somewhere, so...
No, but that's a lot of...
That's a lot of
that's
moolah.
That's a lot of moolah.
A lot of buns.
A lot of buns or...
Buns, it's a...
It's bones, right?
No, it's buns. David Brent on The Office says that.
Oh, okay.
Buns, it's short for Bunsen burner. Nice little earner.
Oh, nice little earner.
Buns, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's a great David Brent one. But that is a lot of money for Bruce Willis. And in comparison, did Rickman ask for, "Oh, do it for $1,000.
Just accommodation. Now, he would have got paid all right, but just nowhere near that kind of money, I suppose. And he was, you know, in the mainstream, he was an unknown.
Yeah, that's right.
Tony Awards don't necessarily open new doors in Hollywood, I don't think. Or Tony Award nominations, that is.
Yeah, I don't think get you $7 million contracts.
That's right. So, after reading the script, he was underwhelmed. He quoted himself as saying something like, "What the hell is this? I'm not doing an action movie. Come on." You could probably say it better. Say it in the accent.
Come on.
Oh, what the hell is this?
I mean, apart from anything else, that wasn't the quote.
I'm not doing an action movie.
You sound like Nina Conti doing one of her.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
like
okay.
the ventriloquist comedian.
You sound like you're throwing your voice, only your lips are moving.
Not bad. I got half the job done. Perkins doing half the job since 1990.
Half the job of a ventriloquist is just talking. I think a lot of people, I'm doing that right now. I'm doing half the job.
And doing it well,
man. Get
Matt.
A laugh, Jeff. Grow up.
You turn on me so quickly. You fuck.
That's like an homage to you. You're the quick turner.
I'm a quick turner.
I've learned all my quick turning from you. So eventually, though, he was won over by what he said was the wittiness of the script. He quite liked
it. But I like that it's witty.
Yes, it is quite witty.
So bad. I mean,
Do you want to have a fucking go over there, Matt?
No.
You'll do your little British accent, which always sounds like a little...
Yeah, but it's a generic one. We're talking about a recently deceased legend of Alan stage Rickman. And screen. And you're just...
Oh, hang on a moment. This script is rather witty.
That was like he was alive again.
I've changed my mind.
He also...
Because it is... I know, I will say it is a great action movie. Like, it is really great. Like,
yeah.
You would read that script, I imagine, and think this is it's because it's funny.
Yeah, but in his mind, he's like, I'm a theatre actor. An action movie,
what's
I think
he like
you would
in
see
his mind?
Sorry?
What's he like in his mind? What's he thinking?
Which bit? The bit I was about to say?
Yeah.
Come on, Matt. Give it a go.
So so apart from the wittiness, he also really liked the positive and highly intelligent treatment of its black characters, which he said last year in 2015, he said, so 28 years ago, that was quite revolutionary and quietly so.
There's two really strong. There's the limo driver and then there's the sort of buddy cop that helps out Bruce Willis.
Yeah, it's funny that was revolutionary, right? But I mean, it's not like, I don't know how far we've come since then, but yeah, that's amazing. Like, as a kid, whenever I watched it, I wouldn't have even thought twice about it. But if you knew, like Alan did, he was keyed in.
Alan knew all.
After accepting the role, he asked if he could make some changes to the character.
I have some suggestions.
I was thinking...
I'm getting worse.
I was thinking it sounds a little bit Sidney Sheinberg-ish, right?
Sidney!
Sidney! Yeah,
that was what Sidney was all about. He was...
Oh, making suggestions.
Oh, you mean making... I thought
you meant our accents, yeah.
No.
It is very strange for someone to get their first role in Hollywood and then be like, great, I will accept, but I have some suggestions. Yeah. They're like, dude...
Well, that's kind of like...
Did they tell him that?
Are you familiar with the movie? Sounds like you are.
With Die Hard? Yeah, yeah. Love it. One of my faves.
Do you know how he wears a suit in the movie?
Yes.
That was his suggestion.
What were they going to put him in?
What was he going to wear?
He was going to wear like a just dress? Classic terrorist, like sort of that paramilitary sort of gear.
Oh, he looks awesome in a suit.
Yeah. It was a great... suggestion, and it's awesome that they did it. But apparently he wrote a few notes down, like here's some ideas, and he left it on the desk of the producer. And apparently the producer, Joel Silver, responded by saying, get the hell out of here. You wear what you're told.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Burn.
But when he came back to the set, he was handed a revised script with his suggested changes incorporated.
Oh, wow.
Wisdom. So I think that's because they were just good ideas. Yeah.
That would be annoying for a producer because you'd be like, damn, I just told him to get out, but it is a good idea. Yeah.
It's like, that's the opposite of Sheinberg, though, because his ideas were no good.
Yeah.
Some of them were.
Lorraine?
You should be naked. You should be naked in the movie. That's what the kids love naked, okay?
Chimps are always good.
How about instead of a terrorist, a chimp's got the building?
No, he said no chimp. That was a good suggestion. He said change the chimp to a dog. That was a good suggestion.
Change the chimp to a dog and get that man a suit. I tell you what.
But he wanted to call Back to the Future Spaceman from Mars.
No, it was Pluto.
Spaceman from Pluto.
Even worse.
Even worse.
I don't like this Die Hard. I think it should be called Die Hard in brackets Man from Pluto.
I think it should be called...
I'm Sydney.
And the other big suggestion he made was he got a whole new scene added to the movie where he, do you know the scene where he's...
Oh, yes, the American accent.
Yes, he added that in. So
there's a scene.
There's a scene, Jess, where he is discovered by...
Bruce Willis,
John McClane. And so you see on his face for a half a second, he's like, fuck. But then he's like, all right, and he starts talking in an American accent. Because he's a German terrorist.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you're one of those terrorist guys, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
And he sort of plays dumb.
That was really good, Matt.
So you can do American, but it's not British or Sean Connery.
And I can do an Englishman doing American. An Englishman
doing a German, doing an American.
Yeah, that was very specific, but I heard it.
Yeah.
I heard all of the facets of it.
I think that takes real skill.
It does. Absolutely, it does.
So yeah, that was an awesome scene. I watched it again today.
And did he just add that? So he suggested I can do an American accent.
Well, I think he was, it was found that he could do a pretty convincing American accent. And then he suggested that maybe he pretends that he's a hostage. That was his suggestion, which is really cool. Rather than just, anyway, go watch the fucking movie, Jeff.
No, like, I have I seen it. I just sort of forgot
I don't
it.
Have time to fuck around with
okay.
this anymore.
Okay, yeah, no, sorry, Matt. Yeah, no, I didn't mean any disrespect, mate. I'm just really enjoying your podcast and your friendship.
He didn't like to be known as a great villainous actor. He once said that, I don't play villains, I play very interesting people.
Okay, well, toot your own horn there, mate.
All right, mate. All right. We've all been to art college, okay.
But I think that'd just be like a lot of actors that achieve some success will get pigeonholed a bit, and he certainly is seen through that villain filter. I think, like, when he died, you heard in a lot of the articles written about him were great villain actor and stuff like that.
But that's a... Oh, man, I love a great villain. They're awesome. Oh, they're super memorable.
People aren't... I don't think anyone's being disrespectful, but it'd still be like, oh, look, I can do other stuff. And he did. Like, he played a good guy in a bunch of movies, like in Truly Madly Deeply.
Love Actually.
Yeah, if you... I mean, sort of. Sense and Sensibility.
Like Adultery.
Dogma. Have you seen Dogma?
I haven't
plays
seen Dogma.
The voice of God. I haven't seen it in ages, but I really liked it at the time. So, Rickman featured in a few different polls over his years. He was rated in an Empire poll at number 34 in their poll for the 100 sexiest stars in film history.
34. Jess, you made that noise. Is Alan Rickman an attractive, like,
my
hunk
goodness.
Type?
Yeah, something about him.
I mean, I'm definitely mesmerizing voice. No, I'm happy for him to be on the list. I just thought 34 is great.
Yeah.
You know who's number one? Yash. I am number one.
Sean Connery. He was Alan Rickman was 34.
Oh, sorry. That was. I know it's very hard to differentiate, but that was Sean Connery.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Clearly.
Yeah. No. Now that you say that, I can hear it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a slight dialect.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
One's Scottish. One's English.
Yeah.
I call that a dialect.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So number 34, sexiest ever?
Yes.
Sexiest man ever.
In film history. So that was in 1995.
Film history.
He featured in they do those polls. It looked like they do them nearly every year, I think.
I think ever, year to year, is quite redundant. But yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, there's always new people coming in. In 2013.
And new people dying.
He'd slipped down a couple.
2013. Because he's a lot older by then.
He polled at number 40.
But still.
Yeah, it didn't slip too far.
Only dropped a little bit.
And this is a quote from from his listing there. It said, if you wanted to know why, this is kind of describing why.
Please.
World weariness, a biting wit, and a withering way with sarcasm.
World.
It turns out, be crazy hot.
I don't know about crazy.
Alan Rickman remains a perennial favourite in these votes. And that's because he's a classy gent. Sexiest role. If you like nice Alan, then Truly Madly Deeply. If you prefer manic Alan, try Robin Hood Prince of Thieves. Or for classy evil Alan, it has to be Die Hard.
Has to be.
In 1997, he was ranked at number 59 in Empire's top 100 movie stars of all time.
In 1997, was it?
Yeah.
So he's only been in movies for less than 9 years by that point.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. He's really hit the big time.
Has he? He's really skyrocketed.
He's 51 by this time, so late bloomer, but a big bloomer.
Big bloomer, they called him.
Big bloomer.
Big blooms.
But big bloomer.
Yes, I am quite... A big bloomer.
He was in a lot of... He played a lot of great roles.
The big bloomer, for one.
Obviously. And he also directed and co-wrote a film named The Winter Guest. If you know that.
Time of year was that set in?
Guest season, I imagine.
Yeah, guest. Let me have a look.
Are you actually looking at
this? I'm just looking up the plot here. Yeah, it was set... Oh, it doesn't say winter, but it says on a wintry day.
Okay. Yeah, now we can assume winter.
Yeah, but if you say wintry...
Yeah.
Wintry or wintry? Like,
wintry. It says wintry. I say wintry. Is that different?
I'm just picking up on...
I'm mispronouncing that.
Wintry.
Wintry. So, I mean, if you were, you wouldn't say wintry.
In winter.
In winter, because it'd be like, yeah, just a normal
sometimes
day.
On an autumn day that's particularly cold, you go, oh, a bit of a wintry day.
Yeah.
Okay, so we don't know.
So I'd say it's probably not winter.
Lies.
That's what I'd, that'd be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
My guess. That'd be my winter guess.
My guess.
Galaxy Quest, that's a movie that came up a bit as I was reading about him.
And you, where is that set?
I have not seen him.
What season?
Let me have a look.
And what's the objective of the main character? They're on some sort of quest or adventure?
If you didn't say quest, that might have been funnier. Cause...
Yeah, leave the jokes to me, mate.
Yeah, leave them.
I often do.
The J in JP is for Joker.
Joke Perkins. Joker Perkins. Jester.
Jester. Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
I was already thinking about cutting all of that, but that's going to make it... trickier.
I don't know and then, of course, much about Galaxy Quest. Were you going to say something about it?
No, I was just saying that's... I was wondering if you had, because I haven't seen it, but apparently it's a really good movie. But then probably in the later years, apart from movies like Love Actually, his biggest, best-known role was Severus Snape.
Mm-hmm.
And that was seen as a villain, but also, like, it was a real arc, because in the end he was seen to be...
He was a good guy.
Well, that spoiler alert, obviously.
Spoiler alert.
Great. I love when people say that retroactively. Well done.
Retroactively?
Well, you say it after the... you give the alert once you've said the spoil.
Spoiler alert. Dave's a dickhead.
Fact. That is a fact.
That was retroactive.
He directed and co-wrote A Little Chaos in 2015. And he's still got one movie to come out posthumously, Alice Through the Looking Glass, where he voices Absalom the Caterpillar.
The what?
Caterpillar.
The Caterpillar.
Well, you nailed Absalom, but then stuffed up.
Is that right? Absalom the Caterpillar. I think I got lazy after getting through Absalom.
Caterpillar.
So that's yet to come out, and that will be his final.
That looks like...
Well, I mean, we think it'll be his final. We don't know what he'll do.
Yeah, and he's been in a lot of stuff. You know, No, he might. There might be other things coming out.
Zombie movies need zombies, Dave.
Well,
hey, Jess, if you could just sort of take the. I don't think I could ever do a recently deceased episode again because you just have not been mature enough for it.
Have no respect for the dead.
Oh, I bet Cecil's glad he requested this topic.
Oh, my God.
You know what I reckon?
So sorry, Cecil.
Fuck him.
Wait, the dead or Cecil?
Yeah, fuck him. Fuck the dead. They're dead.
No, I agree with that.
Stay dead, dickhead.
I agree with that if we're talking about, like, you and me. But I think Alan Rickman's probably...
Still dead. Yeah, you're probably right. He is probably still dead.
Soaring above us. So Alan Rickman died of cancer on January 14th, 2016. Statement was released by his family confirming that, saying the actor and director Alan Rickman has died from cancer at the age of 69. He was surrounded by family and friends. The pancreatic cancer was only discovered after a minor stroke in 2015, and Rickman only told his closest friends and family. So it was a big shock to a lot of people because he was, you know, still working.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know he was sick at all.
He directed that movie in 2015. Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And that His death, as you guys would have noticed, especially online, led to an outpouring of grief. So I've got a few of the quotes from some people who knew him well. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling tweeted, "There are no words to express how shocked and devastated I am to hear of Alan Rickman's death. He was a magnificent actor and a wonderful man. My thoughts are with Rima and the rest of Alan's family. We have all lost a great talent. They have lost a part of their hearts."
That's lovely, but that has to be two tweets.
That's two tweets.
I was going to say that was an incredible.
Because I can't even finish a thought in a tweet.
Sorry, yeah, that was two tweets.
Okay, well, you could have said that at the start, but okay.
Okay, that was over two tweets in about a 5-minute span. If that. Okay. So if she took a couple of moments to collect the second one as well,
she didn't
have him in the gun ready to go.
No, I appreciate that. That's fine.
Emma Thompson, who co-starred with Rickman 7 times, said, "His capacity to fell you with a look or lift you with a word." The intransigence which made him the great artist he was, his ineffable and cynical wit, the clarity with which he saw most things, including me, and the fact that he never spared me the view, she said. He was, above all things, a rare and unique human being, and we shall not see his like again.
That's very nice.
Do you dislike Alan Rickman? Like, I'm just trying to figure out where this attitude has come from today.
I have no respect I don't want to finish that sentence. Dave's already on. No, just keep going.
You know, this is gonna be one of the podcasts that we put out on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
People are gonna hear this.
Yeah, I know.
Do you have anything to say?
No. I miss Alan Rickman every day, just like we all do.
Don't fuck with me on this one, Perkins. Is not on. All right, fun facts.
You're going to finish off with some fun after that. Those dedications, you're going to bring things up.
I do have respect for the dead.
So, this is... I just thought, you know, maybe bring it back up from the death to talk about some fun facts, things... Interesting things about Alan Rickman's life.
I was going to say, the fun facts still have to do with Alan Rickman. Yes. It's not puppies exist.
Oh. That is fun.
Oh, thank goodness.
Fun fact. I mean, it is definitely a fact.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
All right.
I'd tell that at a party.
All right. Well, see if you'll tell these Alan Rickman facts.
Yeah. I'd love to know. So in 2008, this was from a BBC report. In 2008, a couple of researchers claimed to have designed a mathematical formula that would help find the perfect human voice. The research was conducted by linguist Andrew Lynn of Sheffield University and sound engineer Shannon Harris. The study concluded that the ideal voice for males to be a mixture of Alan Rickman and Jeremy Irons.
No mention of Morgan Freeman.
No mention, no.
Interesting.
The pair worked out their formula based on the combination of tone, speed, frequency, words per minute, and intonation.
Hmm.
They concluded the ideal voice should utter no more than 164 words per minute and pause for 0.48 seconds between sentences. Sentences themselves should fall rather than rise in intonation.
You know when you hear about two people and it makes you feel like you're not wasting your life?
Yeah, big time.
That makes me feel so productive.
But they also make me feel kind of bad for science because it's like, really? That's what we're spending our time on? But we still haven't cured cancer? Okay.
I found that quite interesting.
It's
interesting that it happened, but they are two great voices as well. Jeremy Irons also got a magnificent voice. It's no Rickman, but it's right up there. He was Disney's The Lion King's Scar.
Ah, yes, of course.
Another fun fact, that one definitely was. I'm not even going to look to you just to find out. For the death plunge scene in Die Hard, he didn't have a stuntman. He dropped the 20 feet onto an airbag against a green screen. Watching it now, you can sort of see it's a bit green screeny, but it was quite a drop.
Yeah, it's like that's 6 meters.
Yeah, It's quite a drop.
Wow.
Apparently, though, the look on his face is actual fear as he was dropped on a count of 2 instead of 3.
Oh.
So 1, 2.
Yeah. Wait, what? Yeah. And they did that on purpose, apparently. He would have acted the shit out of that.
That's great.
They say they did it on purpose. Really, that guy just dropped him. And then he was like, oh, no, I was doing it to help Alan's performance.
Yeah.
Ooh. I am an artist.
So that's a fun fact.
Thanks a lot, best boy.
Key grip, you dickhead.
Yeah, you got one job.
You got one job, and it's to have a good key grip. And you dropped me.
Still got my keys. Jinga, jinga, jinga.
All right, well, you've done half your job. I'll dock you half a day's pay.
Jinga, jinga, jinga.
Here's another fun fact. He is 11 years older than Timothy Spall, 12 years older than Adrian Rawlins and Gary Oldman, 17 years older than David Thewlis, and 21 years older than Geraldine Somerville. Nevertheless, the character that the six of them play in the Harry Potter films are meant to be contemporaries and former classmates.
Ah.
Play young.
Well, it's the black hair, you know. When he's naturally salt and pepper, you go back to black, that takes 10 years off easy.
Yeah.
You know? So...
All right, you just think it's the colour or the wig.
It's got nothing to do with his acting, does it?
No, that's
it's just... his hair colour. 90% of acting is hair colour. Dave, back me up.
Yeah. And if they drop that hair on a 2 instead of a 3 count, wow. Woof. You've lost 15
Oscar.
Years.
But you've got an Oscar.
On like onto his head.
Yeah, just drop like hair onto
one,
you.
2. Oh my god, it's on my head.
I wasn't ready for that. Yeah. Thought I had one more second without this fucking uncomfortable thing on my head. Alright, so that's definitely a fun fact.
I enjoyed it. I wasn't sure at first. I thought you were just listening other actors and how much older they were than he was. So I thought, he is 1,946 years older than Jesus Christ. Wow. That's amazing. Wow, how is he still alive? Oh, he's not. Oh, neither's Jesus. Oh.
Dave, have some respect for the dead.
Sorry.
Just a couple more. Despite being author J.K. Rowling's first choice to play Snape in the Harry Potter films, apparently she actually even envisioned him when she was writing the character.
Wow.
No.
That's apparently, cool.
Apparently.
That's cool.
Apparently.
Yep, great. That's really cool. If that's true.
But he was only given the role in the movies after Tim Roth, after Tim Roth, who was the studio's preferred choice, backed out to star in Planet of the Apes.
Oh, Tim.
Good choice, Tim Roth. Yeah, dickhead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that feels like an error. Career error.
Absolutely. Career. I think
it's weird. Like, if J.K. Rowling,
glad that he made that mistake.
Yeah, totally. Oh. I mean, Rickman might have done something even better.
He might Planet of the Apes, for example.
Something even better than even that. That was a series, though. I wonder if Tim Ross survive into the... sequel called? The Beginning of the Planet of the Beginning of the Apes? Of the It has like 3 of the's in the title. So I reckon that is the most shit movie title.
And there's one called
ever.
Dawn
of the Planet of the Apes of the... Suck my dick.
Yeah. I've never seen any of those sequels, and I would never bother.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I would never spend my time watching a movie called Dawn of the Planets of the Apes.
Yeah, it's like just fuck off.
Yeah, just honestly, give up, Tim Roth.
I would prefer to hang out with a bunch of accountants.
Matt,
don't get her going. She's already feeling bitter in this episode.
We nearly lasted a whole episode.
Sorry.
Without you bringing up those gutter people.
Couldn't commit.
It's funny.
Couldn't hate on them enough.
Final fun fact. This is more of a sweet. I think this is kind of a... Oh, no, I don't know. Rickman was only married once, and that was to Rima Horton in 2012. And that I think that was only really discovered when he did an interview with Germany's Bild newspaper. When asked about his relationship, he replied... we are married just recently. It was great because no one was there. After the wedding in New York, we just walked across the Brooklyn Bridge and ate lunch. Just like totally secret. He only told people about it because they asked about it. There was no fanfare or anything like that. Pretty much did it in private.
What a way. That's great.
What a boss.
So I think that's kind of cool. But probably what heightens the interest there of that was that... So that was in 2012. They first met and started dating in 1965.
What?
And they were together the whole time. So.
What?
Yeah.
That's nice.
For 50 years?
Yeah, just about. Yeah.
Wow.
So they were together for just over 50 years? Or maybe about 50?
All up, yeah.
Yeah, about 50 years and were only married for the last couple of years. Isn't that kind of sweet?
Is beautiful, Alan Rickman.
She was even there during his graphic design days.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, she would have been supporting him when he was like, I'm 28 and I want to start studying acting now.
And she was like, okay. Aww.
Yeah, so that's kind
of... Love is real.
Yeah, that melts even Jess's black heart.
Icy cold heart.
Rima, his widow, was a former Labour Party councillor. And, yeah, so she's a career politician. And apparently, yeah, Rickman, not into that.
No, I'm just saying, what a life these two had.
Yeah, and so I guess they saw each other go through.
Had. Because he's no longer living.
Trying to say that bit again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to feel about that at another time. Whether or not when I'm editing this, I'll be like, yeah, fuck it. Let's make Jess play the villain role.
Uh-huh.
As Alan would have wanted it all along. And now for the Snape twist.
I'm secretly a good guy. And I do have respect for him. And I miss him every day.
He was great. I love a story of someone who sort of makes it in the second half of their life. It's like, yes, that's great.
Because it gives you hope.
Yeah, I just find that inspiring, and you know, and it's not like, and also that he didn't come from a career, a house with people in the film industry or anything. Yeah. His dad worked at a biscuit farm.
Growing biscuit from seed.
Yeah, that's right. That's why Monte Carlo tastes so sweet.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, he's
a biscuit farm.
And he decided to just to make his own career, and then, yeah. Oh, what a legend.
What a legend.
So good. Anyway, that's my report. I feel like I did not do the great man justice, but and sorry for the
well. It's
fans
hard
out
to
there,
sum up. It's very hard to sum up someone's life in about an hour, isn't it?
It is,
especially a great life.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, obviously, 69 years jam packed, and yeah, we really just skimmed through it. But yeah, I think he's a fucking legend, and yeah, good on him. Please, let's wrap. Could you start wrapping this up, Dave?
I totally agree. I think he is a legend. 34th best actor of all time on my list. Don't ask me to name the first 33. Oh. Number one, Sean Connery. Yes, I am. So that's the end of the episode. Thanks so much, Matt. And that one was for Cecil.
Thank you, Cecil.
And also for Joe.
Oh, for the first half of the topic. There you go, two topics in one.
Yeah, and of course, for Alan.
And for Alan himself. If you want to us to do one of your, or research one of your topics, we always love getting them online at DoGoOnPod on Twitter, DoGoOnPod@gmail.com. That's where you can find us online. Also on Facebook. You can message us on there, but you know how that works. But thanks for listening. Get those ideas coming. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.